Welcome to Lead Follow, a podcast for pastors and leaders, hosted by MCUSA Executive Director Glenn Guyton. Join Glenn as he talks to folks across the denomination to help equip today's leaders who are leading while following Jesus.
Hello, my name is Glenn Guyton, and during this season of Lead Follow, we'll be exploring ways to reimagine church. Today, I am pleased to welcome Derek Yoder, who will be discussing embracing diversity. Derek is pastor at Pleasant View in Harrisonburg, Virginia, a conference-endorsed ministry of Virginia Mennonite Conference that supports people with intellectual disabilities in living out their goals for meaningful work, relationships, and spiritual development. All right. Thank you, Derek. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to hear about the work that you do, but first we're going to have a question. I have a question for you.
Okay.
We're talking about reimagining church. So reimagining an organization involves transforming how it operates, thinks, and achieves its goals. It's about taking a fresh, innovative approach to every aspect of the organization to enhance its efficiency, adaptability, and overall success. So if you could reimagine one thing about Mennonite Church USA, what would it be and why?
I'm remembering back to 7-year-old me.
Okay.
My parents took my sister and I to the National Mennonite Convention, and this was before the merger.
Okay.
My father was a delegate. 1981, okay. We were in Bowling Green, Ohio. And my parents, I think they thought that, or at least they were concerned that my sister and I would not enjoy being there.
Okay.
Maybe for good reason. I'm a somewhat shy person.
Okay.
So we only stayed for, as I recall, half the week, the part when my father needed to be there as a delegate. Well, my sister and I had a wonderful time. And we insisted that 2 years later, when convention happened in Bethlehem,
yeah,
in 1983, okay, that we go for the whole time.
Oh, wow.
And we repeated that in 1985. I think it was Ames, Iowa, 1987. Purdue, Normal, Illinois was after that. Something happened that in 7-year-old me formed a connection with the Mennonite Church.
Right,
and
right.
I don't exactly know what it was, but I had a sense that these are my people, I belong here. And that spread, a bit of a chicken and egg, I'm not sure which came first here, but there was at the national level, and then we attended Allegheny Mennonite Conference. Okay. That was the conference that I grew up in every summer when they would get together. Church camp became important. Mm-hmm. I went to Laurelville as a camper. I had a sense of belonging, of being at home, and I do recognize that with a last name Yoder, that was sort of built in.
Okay, all right.
But what I wish for is that everyone could have a sense of belonging, of connection, of being at home that was formed in me. Maybe I'm thinking I wish everyone could visit the National Convention.
All right, get my wallet. Somebody get my wallet. let's pay this man. No, okay, go ahead.
And that's something that my wife and I have tried to pass on to our children. Yeah. But yes, the sense of belonging, and I'm not sure how it emerged. Mm-hmm. But I want people who have not had a sense of being at home or being on the edges of church to find a place.
I like that. I think it's important, and thank you for shouting out convention. I think it's an important piece. But you said a couple other things too that I think, and I've thought about this, that really develops that sense of belonging for a community like ours. You know, when you're not living in close proximity to people, how do you get to know who the rest of the family is, mm-hmm, right? So mm-hmm. So we've always built convention as kind of a family reunion. So we get to see people that maybe we haven't seen for 2 years or 4 years, however your cycle is. But then you also talked about camp, and you're a pastor now. Mm-hmm. I'm leading the denomination. Now, I grew up in the Presbyterian Church, but I went to camp.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, I went to the winter camp with the church. Then I went to summer camp with strangers. I went to the Triennium, which is the Presbyterian convention. Went to local events. And so I grew up doing all those things. And it's not lost on me that I wound up connected or working in ministry because of those formational things. And it was a place, like you said, that felt like home. So I think I like that. I wish we put more value in those types of things, but now everybody's playing soccer or travel baseball or, you know, AAU basketball, all these other things. So I think I like that, fostering that sense of belonging. And a lot of the people that have shared really, you know, go back to the basic. What are some of the basic things that we did when we first became church or body together? So I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So now you do a lot of different things, and Pleasant View, you really work with people from diverse backgrounds, cultures, and abilities. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do.
Okay. First, I want to be sure that I am clear.
Okay.
I have the title pastor, okay, but I do not have a traditional congregation.
Okay.
Pleasant View is very much an agency that is providing services.
Okay.
But Pleasant View, well, we grew out of a perceived need, mm-hmm, about 50 years ago. It was a very different time for people with intellectual disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
It was a time when, unfortunately, if a child was born with disabilities, parents were often encouraged to place the child in a state institution.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes parents were even told it would be for the best if you forgot that your child existed.
Wow, okay.
And this really blows my mind. I've heard this story from often the siblings of people that we serve at Pleasant View. It's not that long ago, 50 years.
Right.
But as I understand it, the Mennonite community here in the Shenandoah Valley, they wanted to maintain community. Something about this process of having a centralized institution where we send our children just did not feel right. And so that value of community is how Pleasant View originated. We want to keep our children with us. And not only that, we want our children to be cared for even when parents cannot do it.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, at Pleasant View, we are offering residential supports to people, adults with intellectual disabilities. We offer day services, in-home support for people who are living more independently, also supported employment kinds of things.
Okay. And do you have a traditional, like, Sunday service, too?
We do not. And there is another organization that I want to tell you about.
Okay.
But first, let me say, I think that one of the things that makes Pleasant View unique is that from our beginning, the spiritual needs, the spiritual gifts of people with intellectual disabilities were recognized by Pleasant View.
Okay.
And so we want to prioritize, in addition to the other services that we provide, to prioritize the spiritual lives,
mm-hmm,
of people with disabilities. And so Pleasant View has a pastor.
Okay.
And some days I'm much like a chaplain,
sitting
with people in the hospital. But I consider the community at Pleasant View, the people who live in our houses or receive other services, to be my community, to be my flock, if you will, as a shepherd. And so I like the title pastor.
So who do you feel like you're giving the most support to, though, in your spiritual role? Is it the families or is it actually the individuals?
It's the residents who live there.
Okay.
And the ministry very much goes both ways. I provide support to them, but they teach me every day what the face of Christ looks like among us.
Right.
I feel like there are so many open ends right now to this question that you asked, that things that I could address. But let me talk about one thing.
Okay.
There is another organization by the name of Faith and Light.
Okay.
Faith and Light is about the same age as Pleasant View, a little over 50 years. And it emerged in a Catholic context, but it is an ecumenical organization that locally we meet for worship. Mm-hmm. We consist of our core members with intellectual disabilities and their families and their friends. And Faith and Light worship is intended to be a safe, inclusive space for people with intellectual disabilities. Now, Pleasant View knew about Faith and Light, and as part of our ministry, spiritual ministry, began a Faith and Light worship here in the Shenandoah Valley.
Okay.
And so part of what I do as pastor at Pleasant View is also to be involved in Faith and Light. Now, I don't hold a specific role other than helping to perhaps plan some services at Faith and Light.
Right.
But I think that my concerns about the spirituality of people at Pleasant View are also similar to the concerns at Faith and Light. And so Faith and Light has been very much a part of Pleasant View's spiritual ministry.
Okay. And so Faith and Light is a separate ministry that particularly caters to people with these disabilities and their families.
It is.
And you mentioned it being a safe, welcoming place.
Yes.
So what can other congregations that aren't specialized in this, what can they learn? Or what would you encourage them to do if they want to be more welcoming or so that people would feel safe bringing their families to an environment like that?
Yes. Well, at Faith and Light, first of all, we begin with a strong commitment to the image of God in each person.
Okay.
And the belief that each person has been gifted by the Holy Spirit for ministry in the church.
Okay.
And so anyone is a leader at Faith and Light.
Okay.
I think one of the real strengths of Faith and Light, first of all, is hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
You are welcomed here, and we want to know who you are. We want to know which gifts you bring, because they will enhance our community. We, as a community, are also very aware that we come with weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
We are fragile people, and my community teaches me that every day, and sometimes I forget that, but I too am a fragile person.
Right.
And so we want to know each other. We want to know the gifts you bring. We want to know what struggles you're having. And it is that commitment to hospitality, to recognizing that you are a stranger, but you may also be the host. That strange thing that happens when we extend hospitality, the stranger, the guest, becomes the host. The stranger brings the gifts. It's that story of Jesus on the road to Emmaus after his resurrection, where the two friends invited Jesus into the house and said the blessing, and then their eyes were opened. And so the first thing I would recommend for congregations is to focus not on a program, for example, but to focus on hospitality.
Are there some other practical things that people need to pay attention to? So hospitality is a big one, because I know people can be insensitive, and sometimes people are just weird, right? They're just weird about how they welcome folks that are different from them, and they feel like they have to do too much.
Yes. Well, I think, what can congregations do? One is obvious, and it's structural.
Okay.
what does the physical space look like? Mm-hmm. How easy is it to get into the building, to get to the various parts of the building? I'm reminded when I go to the congregation that I attend on Sundays, where I'm just a member of the congregation, that one of my friends in a wheelchair mm-hmm. could not get to the pulpit.
Okay.
That's just impossible. And I think it's rather amazing, and churches aren't aware, in this country we have the Americans with Disabilities Act that does not apply to churches.
Oh, well, yeah.
So congregations can think about what is our space like.
Yeah.
But something else they can think about is, what are those things in the society that we have accepted without question that maybe we need to question?
Okay. Can you give me an example?
I can. All right. I would love to.
All right.
How do we value time?
Oh, okay.
Time is money. You know, we have to keep things moving. We have to keep with a schedule. In my community, when we start rushing, mistakes happen, people get hurt, needs are not met. Keeping track of time, I think, sort of pushes relationships to the side. Relationships need time. And when we are rushed as a society, things just fall apart in relationships.
Yeah.
So time is one of those things that society has given us. Mm-hmm. Questions about what does leadership look like? I think those are really important questions for a congregation. Our society has a certain expectation of leadership.
Right.
Perhaps people who are educated, people who speak well. Mm-hmm. I find that my community, sometimes with no education at all, sometimes with some, mm-hmm. they are my leaders.
And leading in what ways?
I think that the community that I have at Pleasant View, at Faith and Light, they are emphasizing the same kinds of things that I learned from Jesus.
Okay.
About use of time, about in the incarnation, God became vulnerable. And what does it mean to accept our vulnerability as a gift, to be honest with the fragility that I have in my own life? Our society doesn't like to think about being fragile.
Right, right.
But that is a gift that comes to me from Pleasant View and from Faith and Light.
So it's more like kind of like how we're modeling this behavior, right? You're actually living it out and saying, hey, these are the things that we can do. This is who I am, and I'm able to do these amazing things.
Yes. My life is a witness to the kind of life that Christ calls us to.
Okay. Yeah.
I think another thing that churches can and should do is think about theology.
Okay.
That's related to some of the things that we've inherited from our society. But what does God look like?
Mm-hmm.
We associate God often with power, but God gave up power. We associate God with abilities, but Christ became disabled for us.
Right.
The resurrected Christ bore the scars in his hands.
Yeah.
Of the scars of the society that disabled him. And so think about the structure. Think about the assumptions that we've inherited from our society that we need to rethink, assumptions about how a community should work. Think about theology. Who is qualified to bring a word in the pulpit? Who is qualified to serve communion?
Mm-hmm.
Think about the fears that we have. I remember it was about 8 years ago when I first went to Faith and Light, and I did not have immediate family members, I did not have immediate friends
mm-hmm.
who had taught me what life was like as a person with disabilities. And I was scared when I walked in. And the first thing that happened was one of our core members, who didn't know who I was,
yeah,
walked up and gave me a hug.
Yeah.
That's how things are going to be here. That was me learning that I was welcome in this place.
So what was the fear that you had? Were you afraid that you were gonna do something wrong, or were you afraid that something was gonna happen to one of the people?
No, I think so. First of all, the fear of the unknown. How would I relate to this community here?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
The more that I engaged with Pleasant View and with Faith and Light, there were fears of, if I'm caring for someone, mm-hmm, might I do something wrong? Might someone get hurt?
Yeah.
Those fears were addressed as I embrace courage within me to ask questions, to say that this relationship is important to me and I'm not going to let these fears get in my way.
Yeah.
One of the things that happens a little later on, though,
okay,
after we've taken that step and overcome some of those fears, mm-hmm, one of the challenges I think that churches might have is that fears are replaced with the challenges of friendship. I think it's easy to love people in general, mm-hmm, but to love a specific person is hard. Mm-hmm. When my family, when my wife or my children have to put up with me,
right,
day after day, that's difficult work. Mm-hmm. And so those are the challenges that I think a church might then have to face. We don't want to put into place some program or some Sunday school class, for instance, and think, okay, we have addressed our ministry needs. We have done what we need to for this community or that community. In my case, people with intellectual disabilities.
So you mean like a segregated class?
We don't want to.
Right.
We want to be committed to individuals, mm-hmm, to receiving each person, whoever they are, whatever gifts they bring into the congregation as a whole. Some of those things that can happen, you know, what will happen in your congregation when this person who you have welcomed, who feels at home now, mm-hmm, brings their guitar and they want to play for worship and they don't know how to play guitar. Someone brings the lyrics for a song, mm, and they would like to offer this song, but they need a tune.
Okay.
How can we receive those gifts? What if someone wants to serve communion? Is there a place for serving communion? What if someone wants to bring a message? Can they do that?
Right.
Do we have expectations about what preaching should look like?
Yeah.
Do we have expectations about how polished the scripture reading should be? Or do we feel at home because we are a family, a community, and we value all of the gifts?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've really given us some things to think about, Derek. I think that there is a lot of fear when it comes to people that are different from us. And then as we start thinking about people with disabilities, other health, physical challenges, mental challenges, a lot of times we don't know what to do. And I think you've expressed it quite well. But just for those that are watching, you know, I've heard you say we need to start with hospitality. I think that's a good place for us to start, to embrace one another as brothers and sisters, as family members.
And might I suggest that as congregations start with hospitality, it may be that those that we extend hospitality to will be those who teach us best how to do hospitality.
Yes. All right. Well, I hope that we can relax some. I know it's hard because we have our schedules. We're so time focused. And so how do we give space? How do we give physical space to people to be able to come and be a part of our communities? And then how do we give space of our time and our expectations so that maybe that person that doesn't play the guitar well can come and be a part of the beautiful music that we make, the beautiful noise that we make to praise God?
There was a Catholic priest. His name was Henry Nouwen, a great inspiration for me. He was an academic. He taught at Notre Dame. He taught at Yale. He taught at Harvard. And at some point in his life, he felt burnt out by all of this. And a community in France, a community of people with and without intellectual disabilities, invited him. They said, come waste some time with us.
Okay.
Come waste some time with us. You have something to offer to us, and we have something to offer to you. I think first of all, the use of the word waste is beautiful, because it's not a waste of time. I think that is an invitation that my community extends to the church. Waste some time with us. We are already in your congregations. Waste some time with us.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Pastor Derek. I appreciate that. And thank you all for joining us today. I hope you've enjoyed this waste of time. I hope you find it valuable. But as we close, if you want to keep up with the latest and greatest that is happening in Mennonite Church USA, please subscribe to Piecemeal. Piecemeal is our weekly email newsletter, and you can subscribe at MennoniteUSA.org/piecemeal. Also, we definitely appreciate your financial support, the gifts that you provide to allow us to do this ministry work. So please consider supporting the ongoing work of Mennonite Church USA at MennoniteUSA.org/give. Thank you so much for joining us today.